Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 135, recorded Monday, November 20th, 2017. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: playing airport bingo and Back to the Future with my new travel PC. So coming to you again from the Travel Commons studios outside of Chicago, Illinois, I've started my traditional Thanksgiving no-fly shutdown a week early, actually. My normal practice is to stay home at Thanksgiving week, avoiding what is in the U.S. the busiest travel week of the year. But this year, I'm taking advantage of, quite honestly, every opportunity to scale back my travel a bit, consciously going to an every other week travel schedule. By the way, this is a huge, huge change for me. I think last year I traveled all but 6 or 8 weeks of the year. I'm finding that that this more leisurely approach makes me a little less brittle or more accepting of travel hiccups, which came in very handy on my last trip because, as I feared, I had jinxed myself with the last, in the last episode when at the end of actually this intro segment, after a great flight back from DC where, left early, had a middle seat open, arrived early in O'Hare, didn't have to wait for a gate. I mean, it all lined up. And so, of course, I said, well, damn, if this doesn't make me look forward to my next trip. Well, jinx, right? We all know that no good deed goes unpunished. My next flight to Charlottesville, I had booked for that late Sunday night flight that I've talked about before. It leaves O'Hare at 9:50 p.m., gets into Charlottesville, Virginia around 12:30 a.m. So I'm sitting in the Admiral's Club in O'Hare, say like 8:30, 9 o'clock, catching up on email, reading a bit. I'd been getting the occasional phone notifications. My flight was bouncing around, changing departure gates, which is never a good sign, but it had settled down after a while. So around 9:15, I figured I'd walk over to the departure gate. So I looked up at the monitor, gate G7, as it had been for sort of the past half hour. So I packed my stuff up, and just as I pick up my phone, bing, a new notification. My flight's canceled. I mean, what the hell? So I go up to the desk at the Admiral's Club and I ask the woman there to check. Yep, she said it's canceled, and no, she doesn't know why, and yes, she's just as surprised as I am. So of course, American sends me a nice notification that they've given me a complimentary rebooking onto the same flight the next day, so leaving 9:50 p.m. Monday. Seeming, an American seems to expect that I'm perfectly happy with them blowing a hole, wasting a whole nother day, blowing that hole in my schedule. The Admiral's Club agents knew, though, that this was not an acceptable answer. And one of them immediately started looking for alternatives. And I did the same, looking at Charlottesville, Washington, D.C., both of those airports, Reagan and Dulles, and Richmond. Because of how late American had canceled, there was nothing available the next morning. And of course, it's Monday morning going into D.C. Not surprising how full planes are flying these days. After about 20 minutes of nonstop keystrokes, the Admiral's Club agent found me a flight the next day at 11:30 a.m., getting me into Richmond at 2:30 p.m. I took it because that was as good as it was going to get. And for all that work, and she did a lot of work, I gave her a couple of service recognition coupons that American keeps sending out to me as a status flyer. She'd really earned them. And as I heard other guys around me scrambling for hotel rooms, I stopped thinking about how American had wasted my Sunday night and was going to waste my Monday morning. And instead, I was kind of happy that the cab that I was going to catch was taking me to my own bed. So following up, I'm sort of short cycling what has become my normal monthly cadence, just squeaking in episodes at the last day of the month. Instead, kind of like I said, short cycling so I can give you something to listen to in those Thanksgiving airport lines and traffic jams. AAA, the American Auto Association, forecasts 45.5 million people hitting the roads this Thanksgiving this Thanksgiving weekend, the highest since 2005, probably some combination of low unemployment and low gas prices. And as the Thanksgiving holiday has expanded, I mean, try finding anyone in the office on a Wednesday. Tuesday evening is now forecasted to be the worst traffic when getaway drivers and outbound rush hour combine into some sort of hellish brew of standstill traffic jams. In Chicago, the trip from downtown to O'Hare is forecasted to be an hour and 14 minutes at the end of the day tomorrow, almost four times what it would take on a clear road. Not that I know what a clear road on the Kennedy Expressway looks like. Maybe, I don't know, 2 o'clock in the morning. But that hour and 14 minutes is surpassed only by the 2 hour trip to JFK that's also forecasted for those of you in New York tomorrow evening. Steve Frick left a comment on the Travel Commons Facebook page after the last episode's topic on rating great inflation, the need for the five-star review. Steve writes, "Hey, I'm a Yelp guy, and I consistently give Fairfield Inn 3 stars. My reviews are along these lines. Typical Fairfield, nothing that bad, yet nothing that great. Friendly staff, clean location, and comfortable beds. Same subpar Fairfield breakfast, but that's why you pack instant oatmeal and protein bars. You know, there's nothing that makes me want to tell people to stay there. Also, your untapped information got me thinking. With about 1,200 unique beers, I'm well below your numbers, but I came in with the bulk of my ratings also at a 3.75. Well, Steve, thanks for that. You know, I've been thinking about this. My rationalization now for my beer rating skew is selection bias. With over now 5,200 unique beer check-ins, I pretty much know what I like and, more importantly, what I don't like. So I'm not knowingly going to order and pay for a beer that I don't think I'll like. Now, I did have an exception to that this past weekend when my son and I were at FOBAB, the Festival of Barrel-Aged Beers here in Chicago. We had volunteered to pour on Friday night, the first night, which is actually, I've done it for a couple of years now. It's a lot of fun. I get a kick out of it. And it also earned us a free ticket for Saturday night. So my son and I are running around the floor tasting beers on Saturday night. And at some point, my son gives me a glass, says, "Here, taste this." I spit it back into the glass and then dumped it and then rinsed the glass twice. It was awful. I mean, what was that? Well, it was when I looked it up, it was a beer that I had specifically said I wanted to avoid after reading the description of the program, which said, "Aged 12 months in Ardbeg Scotch barrels with coffee and peanut butter." It kind of like clicks my gag reflex just reading that description. I rated it a 0.25 out of 5 because 0 doesn't register as a rating. I mean, if that's what it takes me to get my my average beer rating down to a 3 or a 3.25, forget it. I think I can live with a little bit of rating skew. Now, I started off the other topic in the last episode, the value of loyalty, with the story of finding a new Jag in the Hertz President's Club aisle at Atlanta Airport. And of course, I grabbed it. The next afternoon, though, I was kind of wishing I'd taken an Uber or a Lyft. My meeting in Norcross, north of Atlanta, was running late. And as I'm refreshing Waze in the meeting, I could see the traffic both through and around Atlanta was building. And the rental return is at least a 15-minute ride to the terminal when the train doesn't make an unscheduled mid-transit stop, as I described in an earlier episode. So anyhow, I'm sitting there in this conference room gearing myself up for missing my flight and then dealing with the hassles of finding a seat on something later. And as I'm thinking about this, up popped an email from Hertz offering to drive me to the terminal for $20. boom, sold. And so after I pulled into the Hertz garage, one of the car, I don't know what they call them, checker-inners, whatever, agents, whatever those people with the mobile terminals are, she hopped into the driver's seat and off we drove. And honestly, she was just as happy driving that Jag as I was. "I love this car," she said as we pulled out. "It's such a beautiful day. I may just drop you off and keep on driving." We had a very good chat. She dropped me off at the door closest to the pre-check line. I legged it in to make my flight. I won't say I'll pop for that service every time, but I will tell you that $20 was worth it. Also, thanks to Christina Sands of Booking.com's business travel blog, who put Travel Commons number 2 on her list of the 7 podcasts every travel manager needs to listen to right now. She describes the podcast as serving up pithy travel advice since 2005. Well, Christina, thanks very much. I try really hard to be pithy. Success factor on that is probably 50-50 at best. Anyhow, thank you very much for the shout-out. Appreciate it. When I was in D.C. last month, I added another Subway tap card to my collection, which is a bit of a bummer because I still had an old-style Metro card, you know, the paper fare card with the mag strip, that had at least one ride's worth of fare still on it. So now I have what they call a Smart Trip card, and this goes along with a Ventra card from Chicago, an Oyster card from London, and a Breeze card from Atlanta. I hold on to them because they're reusable, and while not expensive, you know, the costs start to kind of add up. The Atlanta and DC cards are $2 each. Now, you know, they're refillable, they're not disposable, so they're reusable. And you tap instead of inserting, so there's some sort of NFC or RFID chip in them. But, you know, they were $2 a piece. The Chicago card is $5 a piece, and the London card is £5, or, you know, about $6.60 at today's exchange rate. Yeah, the Chicago card is, of course, the one I use the most, and it's nice because I can top it off with a smartphone app. Comes in handy when I decide to take the L from O'Hare downtown, beats standing in what seems to be the perpetual long lines in front of the O'Hare fare machines. You'd think that if CTA is going to charge a premium to board at O'Hare, which they do, they'd at least pony up a couple more machines to cut the line to pay it. Now, little-known pro tip for folks coming into O'Hare, skip the line and pay with your smartphone if you've got Apple Pay set up. It doesn't read as fast as the Ventra card, but it works, at least on the L, the subway. I don't know about the buses. Now, when I was in London this past summer, and I think I talked about this in an earlier episode, the Underground was a little wonky with regards to my iPhone. I could tap in at the turnstile with my iPhone, so the gates would open, but I couldn't tap out, which means I couldn't get out, which was a real hassle. But my daughter, who has a contactless debit card from RBS, Royal Bank of Scotland, she had no problems. Of course, the Oyster card, not a problem either, but since there wasn't an app to top up my Oyster card, I ended up having to queue in front of a lot of fare machines. Last month, New York announced that they're hiring the same company London used to revamp the MTA's payment system. Now, I hope this time they get the Apple and the Android Pay working correctly, better than what it did in London this summer. And quite honestly, more broadly, I hope that these sort of tap cards is just kind of the temporary bridge until these sort of transit systems can fully upgrade their systems to use smartphones. And until then, though, I carry a card holder in my backpack with these, you know, $15 to $20 worth of Subway tap cards. And hey, if you have any thoughts, questions, a story, a comment, a travel tip, the voice of the traveler, send it along. The email address is comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com. You can always use a smartphone to record and send in an audio comment. Send a Twitter message to M. Peacock. You can post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page like Steve Frick did, or you can always go old school and post your thoughts on the website at travelcommons.com. Thank you. So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is playing airport bingo. You know, I got a press release a couple of days ago from a company called AirHelp. They look like they will file compensation claims for delayed flights for you. They'll do that filing in return for a 25% cut of what you get back, which, you know, I mean, I guess if I think about it, it doesn't seem so bad since they're doing it all on a contingent basis. If you don't get anything back, they don't get any money for their efforts. Well, anyhow, they sent along an airport bingo card for, as they put it, helping you pass the time while not so patiently waiting to board. It's kind of the airport version of buzzword bingo that we all play on conference calls. Instead of you know, marking a square when someone says synergy, AirHelp has squares for things like police dog and solo traveler. You know, I guess that's okay for a start, but as everyone knows, as longtime listeners know, here at Travel Commons, we try and go, I don't know, I call it the next level of road warriorism for those of you with more of an academic bent. You know, instead of being Road Warrior 101, we try to go to 201, the next level. Now, I'm not going to fill out all 24 squares because, God, that would be boring. Maybe I will. Maybe I'll do it on a blog post on the Travel Commons website. But you know what? Here, at least, are the first 12 squares that I think should be on any solid airport bingo card. Here are the first 12 squares to get you started. So number one, 10 to 15 minute traffic jam on the airport access road. You know, it's not long enough to make you miss your flight, but it's just long enough to get those stress hormones flowing. Square number two, the guy in front of you in the pre-check line walks through the metal detector with his smartphone. The alarm sounds. He stands there, puzzled. The TSA person rolls her eyes and asks for the umpty-umpth time if he'd emptied his pockets. He then looks surprised that his smartphone, made of metal, would set off the metal detector. She looks at her watch, wondering how long till her next break. Square number three, girl pulling a Hello Kitty kid-sized rollerboard on her way to grandma's. Hey, I mean, hey, look, who says that all of the airport bingo squares have to be snarky? Square number four, the woman in front of you in Starbucks line orders a half-calf, three-pump, no-foam vanilla latte, breaking the unsaid three-adjective rule. Hey, look, it's Sodexo, not your corner Starbucks. Keep it simple so the rest of us can order. Square number five, hey, it's a piano bar playing Christmas carols. Or if you're in the Nashville airport, it's a country duo doing Christmas carols. You stop and you enjoy it for a sec. Square number six, a family of four or more walking abreast slowly so that the people racing for their gates have to drift into oncoming traffic on the left or go over to the right and try and thread through the crowd in front of a boarding gate. The only upside to this, hey, one of the family might be pulling a Hello Kitty bag. Square number seven, hey, you score an available rocking chair. More airports really are scattering these around in front of windows and terminal connectors and random hallways. Hey, bonus if it's next to an open and working electrical outlet. Square number eight, a craft beer bar with beers that you haven't had. Get those stress hormones back under control and increment your unique beer counter on Untappd. Square number nine, dueling gate announcements. Gates G20 and G22 are boarding at the same time with each gate agent talking over the other one. You hear boarding group three called and hustle up to the door only to be shunted over to wait in the shame station. It was the other gate that called boarding group number three. Square number 10, boarding is complete and there's an empty middle seat next to you. The clouds part, a golden ray of sunshine reflects off the iPad of the guy sitting in the window seat, illuminating that lovely little bit of extra elbow room. You and the window seat guy look at each other for a moment, smile, and then you feel those stress hormones drop another notch. Square number 11, missing crew. So boarding's complete. You're next to an empty middle seat, but you have no crew. Their flight was late, and it pulled into a gate two terminals over. They're on their way, but now you're worried that some standby will drop into that empty seat. That golden ray of sunshine dims a little bit. Square number 12, early arrival. Not only did the seat stay empty, but favorable winds put you on the ground 30 minutes early. You start to think that you should travel more often. All right, there you go. There's half of your airport bingo card filled out. If you're flying Tuesday or Wednesday, tomorrow or the next day, I think you're going to have more than enough time in line to figure out the rest. Let us know, Twitter, Facebook, the website. Let us know what squares you come up with over this Thanksgiving holiday weekend. So the second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is Back to the Future with my new travel PC. I got to tell you, I've been muttering under my breath about my Lenovo ThinkPad for a while now. I've had it for 4 years. It's feeling a bit heavy and looking a bit beat up. And though I have no doubt that it's been fully depreciated off the firm's balance sheet, I'm not hearing any rumors of an impending PC refresh. So I've been, semi-shopping for a new travel PC, sort of clicking through to Engadget reviews that pop up in my Twitter feed, glancing over, kind of eyeing what other folks on the plane or in the concierge lounges are using. 7 years ago, just about to the day, in what might have passed as an instance of pithy travel advice, there you go, Christina, I wrote about the use case for a travel PC, what it is, and more importantly, what it is not. It's not my primary computer. It's not my podcast production or video editing machine. That's my home PC, which now is up to about 16 gigs of RAM. It's got an 8-core processor, two 21-inch monitors, a Blu-ray burner, a couple of terabytes of hard drive, and it kind of, I think it like dims the lights whenever I turn it on. So my travel PC is spec'd for what's important, what I need when I travel. So lightweight, long battery life, low screen profile so it doesn't get crushed when the guy in front of me power reclines his seat, and also reasonable processing power, and it's about in that order. 7 years ago, in 2010, to save you the math, the 11-inch MacBook Air was my choice for the best travel PC. So my travel PC use case hasn't changed, but the market has, kinda. In my looking around, what I've seen is, I think, 2.5 kinds of travel PCs. There's the next generation of the laptop, thin ultrabooks from Lenovo, HP, and Dell, or the new line of MacBook Pros from Apple. Or they're full-sized iPads with kind of a combination covers, soft keyboards, and then pens if you're using the iPad Pro. And then, you know, kind of the Microsoft Surface Pro is kind of that half case that I mentioned of the 2.5 cases. The Microsoft Pro is kind of the tweener. It's a very thin Windows PC with a fold-out keyboard cover and pen. And I got to tell you, quite honestly, none of these options really spoke to me, at least, not enough to make me want to part with my own cash. The Ultrabooks didn't offer much new. I mean, I guess I might as well sort of accidentally dump a grande cappuccino on my old Lenovo, because one of these Ultrabooks is what I'd get in return. Now, the MacBook Pros are certainly sleek. They're definitely nice-looking machines, but as a travel PC, I don't think they offer much more than the Ultrabooks for, in return for that Apple premium. I've been thinking about the tablet keyboard combo, quite a bit, specifically that Surface Pro. But I don't know, watching guys trying to work that soft keyboard on an airplane seatback tray, I could just see myself wearing a cup of coffee 2 weeks after starting to fly with one of those. So I've kind of kept semi-shopping. Until last week, when I got an email blast from Newegg, which is the online PC parts retailer I usually buy from them when I'm assembling or upgrading my home PC. They had a flash sale on refurbed 11-inch MacBook Airs. Now, not the 2010 model that I had before, but what Apple dubs an early 2014 model. I mean, still 3 years old, but it specs out pretty much identical to my current Lenovo. I looked at it, did a few internet searches, it sat in my shopping cart for a couple of days until I thought, hey, look, for $385, why not? And I pulled the trigger. showed up a few days ago, and save for a corner ding, actually looked pretty new. So I immediately upgraded to the current version of Mac OS. I installed Office 365, then put VMware Fusion on it. And you know what? I'm pretty much ready to go. A pound lighter and looking a little slicker. Looking a little slicker and looking back to the future. Okay, that's it. That is the end of Trail Comments Podcast number 135. I hope you all enjoyed the show, and I hope you decide to say subscribe, check out the show notes for the music links. As always, you can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher. If you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, moans, groans, cries of anguish, the voice of the traveler, especially in Thanksgiving weekend, send them along, text or audio, comment, COMMENTS, travelcommons.com. M. Peacock on Twitter, the Travel Commons page on Facebook, or post them on the website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken time to send in emails, tweets, or post comments on Facebook or on the website. Hey, look, I hope the lines aren't too bad, but I hope this has made the time go by a little bit faster. Until we talk again, thanks. Travel safe. Thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Take care. Talk to you soon. Bye now.